Well, good evening, ladies. Thank you so much for coming to our Women and Faith Ministry. The parking is a little crowded here because we have our women's Bible study going on at the same time over in the auditorium. So we have a big group over in the auditorium and then our small Women and Faith group over here. So this is a great place to be, and I love being here with you all. And the purpose of our Women and Faith Ministry is really to kind of go through just the basics of Christianity, to look at some of the basic ideas, the basic principles. And I know for me personally, it's always good to go back to the basics. I mean, whether you know them or not, it's great to get your foundation down and just be able to think through the basics, to know the basics. And then even to be able to ask questions in your group time, how does that look, or how does that, work with this situation, or how am I to think about this, or, how does this work practically in our culture? So being able to process through that stuff as a group in group time is always a lot of fun. If you don't know me, my name is Stephanie Schwartz. I've been here at Compass Bible Church since the beginning, and I am the director of women's ministry here. So we have a lot of different things going on for women here at Compass, but this is something that's really important to us is, engaging with just the basics of Christianity and meeting women wherever they're at. And it's really important for us to engage with women, talk to women, develop relationships with women, and we feel that so much is really hinged around our relationships with one another. So tonight we're going to go to the beginning of the basics, and we're just going to talk about the topic of God. We're going to think about God, and as you're listening to just the teaching that I'll be doing for a little bit, be thinking in your mind, what do I think about that? And how is that affecting my life? And even be jotting down questions that you have that you can bring up in your group time and talk about with your group and your group leaders and with one another, because this is the place really to process your questions and, to hopefully get some of the answers that you're looking for. So we're titling tonight, In the Beginning, Thinking About How We Got Here, because it's super important for us to think through this question. I mean, in a sense, it's a question that's been around since the beginning, right? Is how did we get here? Is there actually a God? How can we be sure there is a God? Can we be sure there is a God? I mean, that's an important question, because if we can't be sure there's a God, then there's a lot of things that we can't be sure about because we don't know that there's a God. How can we say that we're sure that he's communicated to us or that he has certain standards for us if we don't really know for sure that there is a God? So we want to first look at this by asking the question, well, what if there isn't a God? I mean, what if there is no God? And that's a normal question to ask. I mean, I know that's crossed through my mind. It's crossed through many people's mind. I mean, what if there is no God? What would things look like? What would things be like if there is no God? And if you have an outline, you can just fill in the blanks as we hit these points or the letters that come up in the PowerPoint. But the first question, again, is what if there is no God? If there is no God, as some people say there is no God, those people would be called atheists. Theos is the Greek word for God, and A would be none. So atheists, there is no God. They would say that everything came from particles and energy and matter. And in the beginning, they would say that all those particles, all that matter, everything at one point was compressed down to the size of a pinhead. The entire universe. I mean, we think about how big the world is. You know, sometimes when I'm driving home, I live in San Clemente, and I feel like, oh, it's so far away. You know, I mean, this is a big amount of space. The whole world, think about the entire world, and then just our little solar system, and then the sun, which is so huge, 93 million miles away, the sun, and then the entire universe and all of that matter compressed down to the size of a pinhead. those that say there are no God would say at one point that was all matter, all particles were just reduced to that size of a pinhead. And we'd have to ask, and I've had the opportunity to ask atheists before, well, if that's true, where did the particles and the matter and the energy, where did all those things come from? I mean, if they were all reduced down to the size of a pinhead and everything began from this explosion that came from this, you know, small amount of masses and masses of matter, where did all of those things come from? Where did the particles come from? Where did the matter come from? Where did all of that energy come from? Did it just create itself? I mean, was there nothing and then all that matter came into being from nothing? Or was that matter created? Was there an outside source that made that matter, made those particles, made all of those things, even if they were at one time compressed to the size of a pinhead? And if it was created itself, how could it create itself? How could something come from absolutely nothing? I mean, if there was absolutely nothing, whatever it is, how could something come from absolutely nothing without something else acting upon it, without something else bringing it into being? It kind of defies logic. It doesn't make a lot of sense. And scientists have different laws of science that would kind of state the fact that these things couldn't come from nothing. I had the privilege of studying chemistry in college. My undergraduate degree is in chemistry, so I was able to study a lot of scientific principles, and one of them is the law of conservation of mass, and scientists would say that matter, particles, they can change forms, but they can't be created or destroyed in a closed system. So thinking, okay, well, this idea of there being absolutely nothing and then matter and particles coming into existence with no outside force, it makes no sense. It even defies the law of conservation of mass. And then the second law of thermodynamics or the conservation of energy. I remember one time when I was a brand new Christian in college going into a physics class. And the physics teacher, really brilliant man, he was an Indian from the country of India, and he came in to class one day and he said, I am going to prove from the second law of thermodynamics that there is a God. And, you know, again, I was a new Christian. I was like, wow, this is awesome. But, you know, some of the other people in the class were like, wow, I didn't, you know, pay for state tuition to hear that there's a God. But it was interesting. He showed how from this scientific law, there had to be a God. Because this law says that in a closed system, things can go to less order or stay the same, but they never increase in order without being acted upon by an outside source. For example, let's just say that you had a box, a cardboard box, and you put a pile of salt on one side of the cardboard box, just a pillar of salt, let's say, and a pillar of pepper on the other side of the cardboard box, and you left it for long, long, long periods of time. Those pillars of salt and pepper would be ordered in a sense. They're designed. They're structured in a sense. If you left it out, let's say you left it out in your yard for 10 years or even 100 years, after a long period of time, you would come back and look at your box and either it would be the same or they'd be all messed up together, the salt and the pepper. But you would never have this messed up conglomeration of salt and pepper and leave it for 10 years or 100 years and come back and they'd be arranged in two neat piles. That would be violating the second law of thermodynamics, which says that things go to either more disorder or stay the same, but never become more ordered unless acted upon by an outside source. So some of the basic laws of science don't really jive with this idea of there being absolutely nothing and then everything coming into being from absolutely nothing. And that's something that we would have to concede. If there is no God, then everything came from nothing. I mean, that would just have to be true. Everything that there is, the chairs that we're sitting on, the world that we're in, the food that we eat, the baby that you're holding in your hand, everything came from nothing. That's in our planet, our world, and our universe. And if there is no God, and scientists would agree with this as well, then we have to say that life came from non-life. And that's a hard one for scientists to explain, even the brightest minds that are out there. How was it that at one time there was just particles and matter, molecules, substances, and at some point in time, space, history, life suddenly appeared? Things that were non-life were existing, and suddenly they became alive. There was life. There was living life that reproduced itself and existed, you know, apart from anything else, just suddenly appearing on the timeline of astronomical history. It's hard to explain. We haven't ever seen that happen before, where non-life or life comes from non-life, and yet that's a necessity. Without God, there would have to be non-life from life. And people who don't believe in God would say, well, there was matter plus a really long time plus a lot of random chance. And with that matter over really long periods of time with a lot of random chance led to life, or, you know, led to what we have today. Abiogenesis is the study of life from non-living matter. It's a way of describing that life came from non-living matter, and yet there's no way to explain that, how life just came from non-living matter. Again, how we have life, what brought life into being. And then scientists will debate as to how that happened or where that happened. If they do believe that, they'll say, you know, maybe it happened in the ocean. Maybe there were all these chemicals and compounds and no life in the ocean, and suddenly something, you know, triggered electricity, whatever it is, and life came from non-life in the ocean. And some will say maybe it happened in the atmosphere or in the air. Some will say maybe in the earth or on the ground. And some will say, hey, maybe it happened in outer space. Some will even say maybe some alien form seeded us here. But they will always have to have an answer as to where that life came from. And, you know, scientists in general don't agree as to where that life came from or what happened to cause life. And in the end, nobody really knows. No one can say for a fact this is how life came into being. This is where life came from, non-life, how organic or living things came from non-living. So if there is no God, we could add to that that not only would we have to have everything coming from nothing and life coming from non-life, but we also have to admit that there's no reason for our existence. I mean, if there is no God, there's no reason for us being here. You know, we think about that. We think about what's the reason for life or what's our purpose for life. And if there is no God, if it was just, you know, some random explosion billions upon billions of years ago, and life came from non-life, and we're going back to absolutely nothing when we die, then there's really no reason for this life. And even the great atheistic minds will agree to that. They will say, yes, there is no real reason for life, and it doesn't matter whether you exist or not. And if you feel like there is a reason for life, that's something that you're just imagining in your own mind to make it easier for you to cope down here. But if there is no God, then there is no real reason for existence, because we come from nothing and we go to nothing. And what difference would any of that make in the end? And adding to that, if there is no God, then there's no meaning and no purpose for life. If there's no reason, there's no meaning and no purpose. You know, people have, throughout human history, had this longing for purpose and for meaning and for reason. And that would make no sense if there were no God, because why? Why would you want a purpose in a life where you come from nothing and you go to nothing, and ultimately everything is going to die out and decay and go to nothing, and nothing will exist at all? I mean, what's the deal then with meaning and with purpose? Why would you have meaning and purpose? They would be things that are fabricated. We could artificially think that there's meaning and purpose, but there's no real meaning and purpose for life. And if there's no real meaning or purpose for life, then nothing you or me or anyone else does really makes a difference in the end. I mean, we can feel like it makes a difference. We can think it makes a difference. But in the end, we die and we go to nothing. And, again, everything burns out. The sun will burn out. The universe will burn out. And everything will implode and become nothing. And so really, what difference does any of this make? I mean, why do we feel that there's got to be some meaning and some purpose in this life and that things must make a difference? They don't. They don't if there is no God. Whether you're a doctor, let's say you're working really hard to find a cure for cancer or, you know, help cure AIDS, or you're a teacher and you're investing into the lives of others, into maybe young people or other people, helping them to be more productive or have a better life, make better choices. Or let's say you're here to advocate for the rights of women or the rights of oppressed groups, or, you know, to make life better. There's no real purpose for that. I mean, that might make you feel better, but we go to nothing. And if we go to nothing, and again, there's nothing in the end, and it's all just going to blow up and burn up, then we're just patting ourselves on the back. But there's no real reason for any of that. And, you know, again, even the top atheists will concede that. They will say, you're right, there is no real meaning or purpose for life if there is no God. And it's funny because we see, you know, even in art and in literature and film and movies, we cheer the hero, you know, the good guy. We like the one who's making sacrifices. We like the one who's giving up for the good of others. We always have. Humans always have cheered on that hero. Makes no sense if there is no God. Because again, there's no meaning and there's no purpose. Why is it that we want to support the good guy and we want to, you know, shake our fist at the bad guy? It just doesn't make sense if we come from nothing and we go to nothing one day. And, you know, let's say that there's an elderly lady who can barely walk across the street, and we see her there, and nobody's watching, there's nobody around, and we see her just slowly, slowly, slowly trying to get across the street with her purse. And again, there's nobody there, but every now and then a car drives by real fast on this street that she's trying to cross, and we think, you know, she might get hit. She's going so slow. We could go over there and we could help her cross the street. We could put her arm in our arm and help her carry her purse and help slow down that traffic and get her across the street. Or we could kick her and take the purse and take her belongings and walk away. And what if nobody saw us do that? Nobody, and we never got caught. And let's say she had $1,000 in her purse and we were $1,000 richer. What difference would it make if there's no God? If we were never to get caught, no one would ever find out whether we helped her across the street or whether we kicked her or even beat her up and took her money. What difference would it make if nobody saw and there was no God? It wouldn't make any difference at all. It wouldn't make any difference at all because we come from nothing and we would go to nothing. And what would happen in the end? Nothing. So again, why wouldn't we want to just kick her and take her money? Why do we feel that that's wrong? Is that something that we've just learned? Or is there something really genuinely wrong there? I mean, if we're all going to die out one day, then in the end, our lives are no different than the lives of a rat or a flea or even the existence of a germ. Why would we be any different? Why would we feel so superior? Why would we have this innate longing towards meaning and purpose and value if there is no God? If there is no God, then there is no real right or wrong. I mean, there's nothing that's really right or really wrong. I'm sure we can tell ourselves there's right and wrong. You know, we could say it's wrong right now to get out a gun and shoot one another. But who says? I mean, why would that be really right or really wrong? Who's the one that says what's right and wrong? Are these just things that we've come up with collectively as a community, as a culture, as a people group so that we can get along with each other? Are these things that we've just fabricated so that we can work together well and, you know, live on this planet or live wherever we're called to live in a way that makes sense? Or is there something real? Is there a real right and wrong? And when you violate a certain standard, that's actually wrong behavior. And when you do well, that's actually something that's legitimately right. And if so, whose values are right? Especially when we look at other cultures and other groups. Who are we to say that one group is wrong and another group is right? Who are we to impose our values on other people? And what if a group of people decides that they want to exterminate people within their culture? Is it wrong for us to say you shouldn't do that? Or should we just let them do what they want to do because all of these ideas about right and wrong are just fabricated anyways so that we can all get along with each other? So who are we to impose our ideas on each other if there is no God? If there is no God and there really is no right and wrong, then there's no good and no evil. And to say that something's good or to say that something's evil is just something that we've learned, something that we've fabricated, something that we've come up with, but it's not actual. It's not legitimate. You know, when we ask questions like, you know, if there's a God, why is there evil? A question like that wouldn't make sense unless there was a God. Because how could there even be evil if there was no God? Things would just be matter, time, and circumstance, and particles, and energy, long periods, and die, and that's it. But evil, what would evil be? Evil is the opposite of whatever's right. So how could there be evil if there was nothing that's legitimately right? And if there is no God, how could there actually be anything evil at all? We wouldn't be able to condemn things that are wrong or praise things that are right. You know, when we see certain behaviors and we think, oh, that's awful, that's horrible, that's wrong, that shouldn't be happening, somebody needs to do something, we would have to say, you know, we're just making this up in our head so that we can all operate better as a collective community. Or when we say, wow, that's so noble or so right or so much honor in that act or in that action. Says who? I mean, in a way, we're just making it up so that we can get along better. And in the end, why not just live for yourself? Why worry about anybody else? Why not just do whatever it is that you want to do to better your own life? And, you know, like the lady with the purse. Take her purse. If nobody sees, why not just take the money? Why not get whatever you can get in this life as long as you don't get caught? And if you're guaranteed not to get caught, why do anything to benefit another person rather than yourself? We shouldn't feel guilty about anything. I mean, if there is no God, why would you feel guilty about something? Because feeling guilty implies that we feel that we've done something wrong. So I guess that would just be because we learned it. Maybe our parents taught us something, or our teachers taught us something, or our culture taught us that something's wrong, but it's not actually wrong. So guilt isn't actually real. It's not a real state. It's not a real sense. It's something that we've just come up with. But what's so odd is we do feel guilty. we do feel guilty because we're in a state of guilt. We do live as if there's a reason for life. And we have to ask ourselves, are we just pretending? Are we just making this up in order that we can get through this thing quicker or get through this thing a little easier? Or is there really a reason? Is there really meaning? Is there really purpose? Is there really right and wrong? After we die, is there going to be more than nothing waiting for us? We sure live as if there's meaning and purpose. And again, we praise the things that are associated with meaning and purpose. We love, and rightfully so, we love the concept of love. I mean, the fact that, you know, we would love somebody else, that we would put the interest of someone else above our own. It's not just some random way the chemicals are reacting in our body and in our brain to cause us to have some false feeling of love. The fact that we're kind to one another, we love kindness, we love brotherhood and unity, and when people get along and there's peace. The fact that we don't like hate, bitterness, and strife, and anger, and murder, and war. Those things are things that we just grate against naturally. Is that all something that we've artificially learned, or is that something that's innately hardwired within us? And if it is, it would only be hardwired within us because there's a God. Otherwise, it would make no sense. Why do we feel guilty, live as if there is right and wrong, and long for meaning, long to know what our purpose is in this life? Well, let's look at it from the other side and say, well, what if there is a God? What if not, is there not a God, but what if there is a God? Then this would all make sense. We would feel guilt because there would be things that we actually did wrong before God. We would long for meaning and purpose because there is a God who made us, a God who values us, a God who has a meaning for our life and a purpose for our life. Genesis 1:1, the very first verse of the Bible says, "In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth." That means that God was the one that began the whole thing. God began the whole program. God started all of this. God is the one that created us, created the universe, created our world, the animals, everything within it. So if there is a God, the Bible teaches us, or we would know, that we were created in his image. And we see that in Genesis 1:27. It says, God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him, male and female, he created them. His own image, meaning that he created us with intellect. We can think because he thinks. With emotion, we feel things. We feel emotion because God feels emotion. And with will, we have the ability to choose between right and wrong because God has will as well. God created us in his image with those things. And if that's true, it all starts to make sense. The fact that we feel guilty, the fact that we desire meaning and purpose, the fact that we would admit that there are things that are just right and things that are just wrong. If there's a God, it all makes sense. Of course that would be true. If there's a God, we exist for a reason. If he created us in his image, that means every single person has meaning or value to him. Every single life is important to him. And that's why we value human life, because we've been created in the image of God. Human life is valuable. Every life. We couldn't say that one life is more valuable than another life, because every life would be the result of God's creation. And again, every single life, no matter what ethnicity they are, no matter how rich or how poor they are, no matter whether they're male or female, every single one of them are valuable to God and equally valuable. If there's a God, then he has a purpose for our lives. He created us for a reason. He knows exactly what he's doing. And we are here with meaning and with purpose. It's not some meaningless existence on some giant spinning rock hanging nowhere in the universe until we die and then we fade into nothing. No, instead, there's absolute meaning and purpose for our time on this planet. And that's why we sense that innately. And that's why we even long for that. If there's a God, then there is absolute right and wrong. He is a God who said, you know, this is the way things should be, and this is the way things shouldn't be. And there are things that we can say, you know what, this is wrong. Murder is wrong. Hate is wrong. Rape is wrong. And we can know that's wrong, even if another culture says, no, murder is not wrong, and hate's not wrong, and rape's not wrong. We can say, no, we know it is wrong because God says it's wrong. God says what's right and God says what's wrong. And there is genuine, absolute right and wrong. And we can look at something and say, that's evil or that's wrong. And it can be true if there's a God. God's nature is the standard of right and wrong. Who he is, what he values, what he's designed things to be is the definitive standard for what's right and wrong on this planet. So if we look at the facts, I think the rational conclusion is that God exists. I mean, it'd be hard to say that everything came from nothing, that there's no meaning and purpose, and that there's no real right and wrong. And yet all three of those things would have to be true if there is no God. If there is no God, we would have to say that everything did come from nothing. We would have to say there's really no real meaning or purpose for our lives. And we would have to say there's no genuine standard of right and wrong. And those are hard to concede because that wars against what we see and experience, and that it wars against what our soul feels and knows to be true. So you might be thinking, well, if there is a God, then why doesn't he just appear to us? I mean, why don't we just see him right now in the room? And I think sometimes we don't understand what we're asking if we're looking for something like that. I mean, in a sense, the Bible says that God has appeared to us through creation and that we should be able to look at creation and see his existence. But maybe asking him to appear to us or to show up in the room is something that's unrealistic and that, in a sense, can't even be done. Because God is so much bigger and more transcendent than anything that we could understand or imagine. And so maybe he reveals himself to other ways, in other ways, and through other ways to us. Again, through creation, through things like our desire for meaning and purpose, for our recognition of right and wrong. Maybe those are all ways that he has appeared to us or revealed himself to us. In the book of Hebrews, it says, every house is built by someone, but the builder of all things is God. The point is, you wouldn't look at a house and say, I guess that house just sprang into existence over long periods of time. I mean, if we said that, people would laugh at us. If we said, you know, I bet you over thousands and tens of thousands and hundreds of thousands of years, that house just sprang up from nothing. That just wouldn't make sense. The builder of all things is God. Every house is built by somebody. Someone built the house. And the builder of all things, everything that we see, is God. And that just makes sense. When you see a pot, a clay pot, you don't need proof that there's a potter. Just like when you see this house, you don't need proof that there's a builder. The existence of the house proves that there must have been a builder. The existence of a pot proves that there must have been a potter, or there must be a potter. when you see that clay vessel that's been fashioned or made or molded, you know that some outside force, the potter, worked on it. You wouldn't look at it and say it just came into being from nothing. And the potter, because he makes the pot, he has the right to do whatever he wants with the pot, right? I mean, he can paint it whatever color he wants. He can paint it yellow or blue or red or green or white, or he can leave it unpainted. He can put stripes or polka dots on it. He can do whatever he wants, and he hasn't done anything wrong because he made the pot, right? And in the same way, God can create however he would like to create because he's the ultimate potter. He's the designer. He's the one who made everything. And you know, if the potter's working on a pot and he just doesn't like the way that it turned out, if it's not in accordance with his design, if it doesn't meet the standards that he has as the potter, he has the right to destroy the pot if he wants. He hasn't done anything wrong. It wouldn't be wrong for a potter to say, you know what, this just is not working out. I'm just going to wreck this pot and start all over. You know, if we start thinking about that, if God is our creator, if he's ultimately the potter in a sense, and he's made us, and he can paint us whatever color he wants to paint us, in the same way, if he's not satisfied, he has the right to just destroy us if he wanted to. I mean, he is the creator. And as the creator, he has the right to do whatever he wants to do with us. And that's hard. I mean, that's a hard truth for us to wrap our minds and our hearts around. You know, we feel like God is somehow obligated to us or that God owes us something. But in a sense, if he's the one that made us, and he made us for a reason, and he really does have these absolute standards of wrong and right, it's super important that we figure out what he wants us to do. If there's a God, then he has the right to do whatever he wants to do with us. And it's really important then that we say, God, what is it that you want me to do? I mean, what is your standard for life and for my life? What are you calling me to do with my life? How do you want me to respond to who you are, to your nature, to right and wrong, to good and evil? Are we living the lives that God's called us to live? Are we behaving as the pot that he wants us to be? Or have we fallen short of his design? Have we detoured from the perfect plan for our life? If there is a God, it's important that we ask him. We say to him, God, what do you want from me? What do you desire from me? Really, if you've made me, what is it that you want me to do with my life? If you're the potter and you have the right to do whatever you want to do with me, what is it that you want me to do? What have you made me for? What's my meaning here? What's my purpose? Every choice that we make in this life is going to impact our eternity because there is a God. There is a God. We didn't come here from nothing. There is meaning and purpose. There is right and wrong. And one day, we're going to stand before him. We're going to stand before him, and he's going to wonder or ask us or hold us to account for how we lived in our time on this planet. Did we live according to his design or not? Were we responsive to the knowledge that he gave us through creation and through our own conscience? Or did we reject those things? Well, we're going to go on to talk a lot more about these things over the next 10 weeks or so. Next time, we're going to look at the fact that God communicated to us. How do we know he communicated to us? And how did he communicate to us? But, you know, for this time, we're going to go into our discussion groups, and meet together as groups, talk to your leaders, and they'll ask you some questions and just dialogue with one another, get to know one another. Share what's on your heart, what you're thinking about, what questions you have, what things make sense to you, what things don't make sense to you, what things you'd like more information about. Let me close you all in prayer real quick. God, thank you so much for this time with these ladies to just think through your existence. We know, God, that it's hard to say that everything came from nothing, that all matter, all particles were compressed to the size of a pinhead billions and billions of years ago, and that all that matter and all that particle came from nothing, just sprang into existence. It's hard for us, God, to say that there's no meaning in this life and there's no right and wrong. Something within us just tells us that's not true. And we can try to live as if there's no right and wrong, but it can't last for long. Because the next thing you know, we feel that justice has been violated. And we're applauding the person who's been sacrificial, the one who's the hero. And we know that that's your way of revealing to us that you exist and you've made us this way. And God, if you have made us, which we believe that you have, then we know that you've got a specific purpose for our lives. And I pray, God, that we would not continue for another day, even another hour, without crying out to you in our hearts saying, God, what is it that you want me to do with my life? How is it that you want me to respond to your existence and to the plan that you have for me? God, I pray that our discussion time would go well, that there would be good conversation, that these women here would know how incredibly loved they are by us here as a church and by you, the one who made them in your own image, how much value and worth they have. God, we thank you so much for hearing our prayer. We thank you that you hear the cries of our heart. And we pray in Jesus' name. Amen. Okay, you guys are dismissed to your groups, and I will see you again next week.